my business, the foundation is trust. And
yeah.
I apply that same logic into my real estate world mm-hmm. where I'm not casting a large net of clientele. I'm very specific about the people I work with. Again, it's all about protecting time. And most realtors don't look at it like that, because they feel like, if I say no to this client, I lose money.
Yeah.
But if you say no to that client, you actually gain much more. You just have to be confident in that decision.
Wondering what it takes to succeed in business? Welcome to the Hustle Podcast, where we share genuine stories of success and failure to guide you on your journey to achieving your goals.
All right guys, we are back for another episode of the Hustle Podcast. We're in Dallas, Texas.
It's called the Hustle Podcast. I knew that.
Shane Bergman is from Florida. Mm-hmm. And honestly, y'all, I have talked to Shane a handful of times. Maybe we could condense it down to about 5 minutes. He was lingering around my podcast and he's like, hey, can I have an episode?
I see a setup and I just am like, yeah, can I get in?
Yeah. Can we talk?
They said, yeah.
So this is actually gonna be a fun Q&A because, I have a lot of questions,
okay,
but don't know the answers. So let's start out. You're in Florida.
Yeah.
What part of Florida?
Well, this is a confusing question, because a lot of people don't, if I said the Space Coast, like, does that mean anything to you?
No, I'm from California.
You live in the Pacific Northwest. So
no.
Most people in the PNW don't know this area. So the Space Coast is the...
For a previous episode, I did argue that we are not PNW, just so you know.
You know what? I live on the opposite coast. So as far as I'm concerned, all of you are the Pacific Northwest, okay. California and up.
All right.
But for geographical contexts, I am 1 hour east of Orlando. So most
very
people
geographically
know Orlando, right? So we're going east from Orlando, which is towards the Atlantic Ocean.
Okay.
And then basically where you would run into the ocean is where the Space Coast is, or Brevard County.
Okay.
Melbourne is a city, not to be confused with Australia, but it's literally in Florida. But the bigger city would be like Cocoa Beach. A lot of people know Cocoa Beach. And then if you nerd out on space, or if you even care at all remotely about things that are happening in the history, like sending humans and satellites and stuff to space.
Nice save.
Yeah. That happens in Cape Canaveral, and that's in my county. Cape Canaveral is in Brevard County, which is why, full circle, it's called the Space Coast, and it's why our area code, do you want to guess what it is? Three digits. Think
alien?
Like a launch sequence. How does that work when before they launch something?
Oh, it's like a, this is a bad girl.
Like, even before you're about to start a video, is there like a thing that
like a bloop?
Countdown.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
There you go. So if it's only three digits, 3, 2, 1, I'll give you the answer. Okay. That's our area code.
3, 2, 1.
Yeah. Yeah. It used to be 407, which is Orlando. And then in like 1980 something, there was a guy that was like, man, we live on the Space Coast.
I thought you were going to say your area code was Area 51. So
it could be. It's also that area. It's 51.
So you live in Space Coast. How long have you lived there? Obviously, for those, I didn't really introduce you super well because...
Sorry, it's a waste of time.
But realtor out there. Obviously, military background as well for those of you who know Shane Bergman. But if obviously you don't, military background. So give us a little bit of backstory, military to real estate, and how you landed at Space Coast.
Yeah. Okay. So I spent 10 years active duty in the Navy.
Thank you for your service.
You're welcome. So I was an enlisted guy for 10 years and specifically served on submarines. And my job was a nuclear missile technician.
Somebody did tell me at this conference, if I want to know anything about, submarines, to, talk to Shane. I've never had that thought come in my head, but I feel like
most people don't know anything about submarines. And when they think about them, they're always like, oh my God, you're huge. How did you fit in a sub when they talk about me? And then they're like, aren't you claustrophobic? And it's like, well, yeah, if you think about it, like we all are. Like it's not like a settling feeling where it's like I'm 1,000 feet below the surface of the ocean in a tube with another 150 guys on board. And, you know, things go down.
Yeah.
Like it's not a great situation. So that was my life for 10 years, several deployments, lots of days at sea. And it's just one of those, it's a very tough job. But, you know, looking back, and this was the bulk of my 20s, I did this. I think the biggest traits I pulled from that was work ethic, you know, camaraderie or making friendships that really matter. And then also like knowing the difference between what matters and what doesn't. And that's like a very like I guess, general thing to say, but all of the skills that I learned in the military have transitioned over into real estate. And I've been doing real estate almost 10 years. So I've been doing real estate almost as long as I was served active duty. And, you know, I think about it a lot. And I think about a lot of the things that I learned in the military. And the more and more I spend time thinking about it, I'm like, you know, there's a lot of similarities that has helped me get to where I'm at now. And as a real estate agent, like I, you know, do well. I am a top producer, as much as people hate to say that, like legitimately in my area and nationally, like that is an accolade that I can say, cause it's a truth about my business.
Yeah. You've worked hard for it. So from taking your stuff of what you learned in the military to starting in real estate, work ethic, you know, all the things that you talked about, what's kind of, what got you into real estate? Was it just like the idea, family, thought it was cool?
Yeah.
If you thought it was cool, we won't judge you.
So my stepmother was a realtor when I was growing up, and I remember like little things, and this was back before the internet. So I remember she was a Remax agent, I believe. And it was, I grew up in Tucson, Arizona. So completely different where I'm at now.
Totally.
But I remember her being a realtor, and I remember her like small little memories of her where she talked about like escrow and all these other things. That was like my first introduction. So I'm in middle school when this is happening. And then fast forward several years, right? I'm about to get out of the military. I'm approaching my 10-year mark. So it's either do I reenlist and then retire, or do we do something different? And at this stage in my life, I had met my now wife and mother to my three boys. And, you know, we were dating, and it was one of those things like we talked about it, and I was like, if this relationship continues and I stay in the military, I'm going to go back and be deployed, and I'm going to be gone for several months, and I don't really know where we're going to live.
Like,
and that's just something, you know, long story short on this one, I didn't want to put her through that. I've served long enough, and I saw enough guys that went through this, and it is a massive toll for the spouse and for that family. And that's something that, you know, personally, I just did not want to do. So it became to a point where I said, well, I need to transition out. What am I going to do? And what I do, what I did in the military, very specialized. Like there's only like two different sectors I can go into, and they're all government contractors.
Yeah.
So highly specialized, highly hireable, but the same job that I did in the military. And so I was offered these contracting opportunities, but ultimately had to take a step back and say, do I want to continue doing the same thing I've done for the last 10 years and travel around a little bit, won't go out to sea as much, and maybe it's slightly better pay, or do something completely different. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, obviously that was, I chose real estate. It allowed me to stay in Brevard County. It allowed me to tap into my more creative side, which I've always had. It's just never really got to express it a lot in the military. Yeah. I was able to take my leadership skills and build out a team and become efficient. And then, you know, all these other systems that I've incorporated into my business over the last 10 years was all just lessons that I learned in the military. And then, you know, just did it in real estate.
What was the hardest lesson switching from military to real estate? For 10 years of what you've done, obviously in the military to 10 years in real estate. Cause I think a lot of people, if they listen or even in an entrepreneur way, they, it's always the, how do I get started? Like what's the failures of kind of like what got you to here? Obviously you're super successful. So what's kind of like that? If somebody joins your team, like what's kind of like your first punch?
Well, I guess couple of different questions in there from the first question, like what I learned the most is like, or the relation is, it's going to sound bad, but like people suck, right?
Yeah.
And that's something that I think in the military, we weren't exposed to it as much because you're surrounded around by the same people and you realize that some of them suck. But at the end of the day, like if, you know, things went down, the person that I dislike would save my life if it came down to that. In the civilian world, it's not like that. And people don't really care about you. So the hardest transition for me has been understanding that people suck. I have to take that territory, and I really have to be very, very specific about the people that I want to spend time with and the people that I want to allow in my life. And I think if anyone knows me enough, they know that that is me. Like I'm a polarizing person and I'm, you know, one of my favorite sayings is, you know, I'm your best friend and your worst enemy.
Yeah.
And it's one of those, it's like, when you think about what is being said there, it's like once like I bring someone in, I literally will give you the shirt off of my back.
Yeah.
But if you're an enemy of mine, like, we would say in the military, stand by. Like, it's just not a good spot to be in.
Yeah.
And so for me, like just learning about that transition, like I have to be very specific and careful about the people that I let in my life because it's a time preserver.
Real estate can be a time sucker too.
Yeah, it is.
People that take advantage of your
clients.
Time. Yeah. And sometimes buyers will say one thing, and then completely do the opposite. And it's just the trust, you know?
Yep. Yeah. My business, the foundation is trust. And I apply that same logic into my real estate world where I'm not casting a large net of clientele. I'm very specific about the people I work with and the people that are attracted to me immediately, like know who I am, know what I represent, and know like we're either in with this guy or he just turns me off for some reason. And again, it's all about protecting time. And I think that's something that's our most valued, you know, thing in life is time. And too many people abuse it, whether they're working with someone that they shouldn't be because, you know, they're thinking about the, well, if I don't work with this person, I'm going to lose out on the commission. But if you flip it and you're like, well, if you drop that person and focus on the people that are actually people your people, like how much more enjoyable is your job going to be? And then how much more referrals would come from that? And most realtors don't look at it like that because they feel like if I say no to this client, I lose money.
Yeah.
But if you say no to that client, you actually gain much more. You just have to be confident in that decision.
And know who your avatar is, who your buyer profile or seller profile is. So this is actually gonna be a fun question because I legit don't know what your answer is going to be. Is, you know, previous podcasts, we'll talk about investments and kind of like separate from real estate, how do you make passive income or do you have any passive income streams that really has kind of given you cushion so you're not just banking on real estate? Mm-hmm. And if you don't, well, this will be a very short question.
Yeah. Multiple streams. So we have a rental portfolio. Like when I say we, I'm referring to my wife and I.
Okay.
We have long-term rentals. I do not invest in the short-term game. Yeah. It's just, I'm a long-term guy and I literally have like a specific 2 mile radius of where I will purchase those products in, and those are our investments. So we've got a decent rental portfolio.
You know roughly how many doors you have?
Six.
Six?
Okay. Yeah. So in all one geographical location. Okay. And some of those have actually, I bought with the intent to flip and I just was like, I want to hold this. So I ended up holding them for rentals. As it stands right now, I am working two separate flips. One of them has been a very difficult process. I mean, like permit purgatory, which I'm sure anyone that has invested, if you haven't experienced that yet, you eventually will. It's just devastating. So I've held that property for longer than I want to admit on this platform.
Can you break it down in 30 seconds that in case somebody doesn't know it?
What?
The permit.
Oh, so yeah, just the city of Cocoa specifically has been very challenging to work with. And so they required permits for work that we never did. So I'm basically having to prove that I never did the work. I bought the house in this condition.
Grandfather.
You know, we're talking roof, we're talking duct work. We're talking a lot of things that I...
It's like you open a Pandora's box and now they're just like, I have no idea.
And actually, since I've been here, the permits were literally approved on Monday.
Oh,
so we'll finally be able to offload that one, which will be great. And then we have a second one that we're running right now. And they'll probably both sell around the same time. But again, very specific about where I buy, how I buy it.
Yep.
And these will be sole, like intent was the flip. Like that was my game on that. I will not hold these. I will.
Out of curiosity, everybody has a number. What's your number to take on a flip? Like in terms of like, or more so like, hey, if I get 60,000-70,000 back, it's worth to me as a flip. Like what's your, do you have like a number at all? Like a threshold?
I like to operate on percentages, so I would feel comfortable in the 15 to 18 range on the low side. Ideally, I'd be north of 20. And I will say, you know, most of the investments that I'm taking on right now, profit range is going to be somewhere between 50 and 100,000 at the end of the day. That's after everything we've done. The most recent one we're doing, that one, conservatively, I will profit about 75 on and potentially a little bit more. It's just, we won't know till I sell it.
So you got flips, you got six stores, any other?
Yeah, YouTube pays us.
YouTube?
Believe that.
Wow.
That, yeah.
Dang.
I mean, I am killing it on YouTube. They pay me actually every 2 months because we don't hit the minimum quota for the monthly, which is $100. So every couple of months, they're shooting us a fat check of somewhere between like $150 and $70.
Wow. Dang, dude.
So we crushed it.
Steaks on you tonight?
I'm about to retire, dude. About to just go full on YouTuber because that income is killing it.
I have my plaque.
Yeah.
Babe, I brought home $70 today.
Babe, I did it.
Babe, I did it. Okay. Curious for the investment, what's your tip for somebody getting in on how to finance it? Because most people, you know, there's creative ways, there's subject to, there's hard money, there's so many different leverages. What was your strategy to get the six doors or even right now, obviously do the flips?
Okay. So the first investment we ever did was a little bit premature. I did it out of a, I have empathy, believe it or not. And there was a client that I was working with during COVID.
Wow.
And they needed to sell their house to buy one. So they had a contingency. And so we put their home on the market. No one would buy it. And they couldn't buy a house. They were expanding their family. It was a bad spot. We had tried for like 80 something days. And they said, dude, we should just give up. And I said, hey, if I buy this house and relieve you guys from that, you can stay there until you find the new house. Like, is this something that you would be open to? And they were like, the hell, like you would do that? I said, well, you know, Gabby and Ryan, you guys need the move and this house isn't working for you. And if this is a solution you'll take, like, I'm not, you know, this is what I would buy it at. And they were, you know, it was a very fair offer. It wasn't like I tried to take advantage of them. So they took it. I bought the house, my wife and I did. And then they lived in there about 40 days, and then they ended up buying another house with me. And, you know, that house has been a very well-performing rental from then. From that, for that purchase, I did obtain a mortgage on, so an investment mortgage on that. And the rest of them, I've used creative financing, I've used our own money, and I've used, you know, all sorts of different ways to fund it. But I think to answer your question directly, the best way to get money is to use someone else's money, OPM, right? Other people's money. And I learned that the hard way, that that house that I told you about in Permit Purgatory, it's literally my own cash. And I have I've been hemorrhaging cash on that one for 3 years. Two and some change is where we're at with that. So it's been a very expensive flip, but I will say a very valuable learning experience, which is how I normally chalk up loss and failure. It's like, it's a really good opportunity to learn. It could be way worse.
Yeah.
So I've used my own money. I've used, you know, conventional investment route and then private money. And I would say, like, out of the three of those, my favorite is now the private source. Once you find those
connections, it's like, it's totally out there. Like, it's just very honestly, sometimes just having the conversation, because a lot of people I talk to, they have so much cash just sitting there. And it's like, hey, if I get 10, 11, even 12% by, you know, borrowing it, you know, or lending it out like all day long, because I'm not doing anything with it. So it's sometimes just asking the questions, and people just don't know or have the creativity to be able to think about that unless you bring the idea, you know?
Yeah. Or they see something and I didn't know about it. You know, like a lot of my friends were like, dude, why are you using your own money on this? I was like, I don't know. It's like, I feel like that's what I needed to do. And here I've been doing real estate. You know, our first investment or flip was, you know, 8-something years in the game.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't know, man. I just thought I had to use my own money. They're like, you're an idiot. Like, don't do that. Like, leverage other people's money. Like, this is the biggest thing I learned from that. But once you start like exploring that space, you'll realize like the first couple of deals, a little bit more paperwork that you need to provide, a little bit more bank statements, a little bit more, because the lender is taking on a massive risk by lending you a lot of money.
Can you actually close this?
Like, are you going to close it? What's your track record? Am I just going to lose my butt on this this deal? And so once you like establish that reputation, I mean, I have guys that I work with, and the money that they'll give you, I mean, we're millions of dollars is what they're willing to fork over once you prove that like you're legit, you know your numbers, and you can make it happen.
Yeah.
But the first couple, like, if you're thinking about how much money you need to spend on it, I mean, there are guys that, you know, will do it for 20%, maybe even less, and that's all the money. And then they will even float the cash for the renovations. So if you're thinking about how much money do I need to do a flip at that 300K price point, like, it's not as much as you need. 30 to 40,000. I know that's still a lot, but you're not, that's not, that's just, that would do the whole private lending. It's not all 300,000 out of your pocket plus another 80 in renovation,
which
a lot of people think about like that.
Yeah, we did private money on our last one. And it was like, I was almost like, I kind of forgot I bought it because it's on somebody else's tab, not mine.
Yeah.
And well, I was like, okay, we have now all this equity like still left over to be able, that's in our account, to be able to actually flip the property.
Yeah.
That's a doozy. I'm like, I'm kind of like in your hurting phase of bleeding, hemorrhaging cash. That was a hemorrhaging cash.
You're hemorrhaging it, but when you're utilizing other, you know, obviously there's a time turnaround. Yep. Like there's a whole costs and all these things. So make sure you conduct that, you know, build it into your numbers before. So know what your holding costs, meaning like how much is it, hold that home, like utilities, what's the money to hold it, like the interest, like all these things you need to compute that into your equation. But yeah, leverage other people's money is like the biggest thing that I wish I had done that sooner, but I'm glad that I explored other avenues because I learned what the best route
very
is.
Quickly. Yeah. Yeah. So before we wrap up the episode, curious, I asked this on the last one. Obviously, you live in Space Coast and, you know, surrounding areas and whatnot. Who moves to your market? What's your average sales price point that kind of sells? Not like what you do, but just kind of like the average. And why do people move to Space Coast?
I remember all of those. Okay.
It's a quiz.
Who moves there? Well,
like what states?
I mean, ironically enough, we see a lot of people transitioning from Miami or South Florida and they move up. So that makes up a good amount of the people that are moving to the area. I mean, it's Florida. So the obvious ones, you know, New York, Chicago, Texas, like this is what we call our feeder markets, which don't make up the majority.
Yeah.
So it's South Florida, people trying to get the hell out of there for obvious reasons. And then it's people that ironically enough are looking for master plan communities. And there's master plan, like I live in a master plan community and it's called Viera. There's one in Jacksonville, which is a city just, you know, an hour and a half north of where we live. But when people search for that one, it's called Nocatee. They accidentally find Viera, and it's normally like my content that they'll find. And then that is how they
stumble.
You're
like, let me help you.
Yeah. Well, that has been a huge thing. For, like, you know, Connor and I have talked about it. It's like, we need to target people that are searching Nocatee and basically show them Viera. But you're seeing a lot of people moving from other areas in Florida as well, which I think people when they think about Florida, they don't realize that. They're just like, oh, it's a snowbird state and people are, you know, fleeing the cold and getting into Florida. You're seeing a lot of people in other very robust cities in Florida leaving because maybe they're maximized on humans there and they're just trying to get somewhere that has better schools because seasons in life, right? Yeah. Like better schools, close to the beach, affordable. Average price point in our county is about $400,000 to break it down. That's countywide. We have a lot of, we have 72 miles of coast. So oceanfront obviously will sell much more than that. Certain pockets are going to sell much less, but you know, the entry point in our area for a decent home, I mean, you could still get something in the low 300 range, but if you're getting something that's not a complete piece of crap, expect to spend around $400,000.
It's kind of like my, as you would call it, the P&W. That's our average price point.
I thought it was interesting. It's like very similar.
Yeah, we are literally average price point, like $389,000. You know, that's kind of just, and then, you know, I would say nicer home, like, or the more luxury end is more like sevens to eights. Millions is like a very small fraction of our market. But like anything upwards is kind of that. So if I was going to go visit Space
Coast. You said why? There was a third question. Why?
Why?
Which I felt like was very similar to the first one.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I was going to say why another reason on that was massive military influence.
Okay.
So we have Patrick Space Force Base, which is one of the largest Space Force bases in the country. Navy installation, Cape Canaveral, which has brought me, which is why I ended up in Brevard County in the first place. And there's some Coast Guard there too. So we do see a lot of military. Happening in there. And then government contracting too. So SpaceX is there, Boeing, Lockheed Martin, massive space industry is there. So you're seeing a lot of people relocate inbound and then outbound too. But that makes up a very good amount of it, like transactionally. As a whole.
Military relocation, which is crazy because like for us, like there's no military.
It's vital to a economy in an area. Like I've lived in Virginia, I lived in Jacksonville, I lived here. You know, it's vital to a community.
And then last question is, if I was to go visit Space Coast, like what's like the one thing like you would have to like visit or like it's known for, or like, you know, the touristy part?
You have to go to Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex. It's iconic. It is a theme park at the end of the day, but you'll see a lot of history from all the shuttle programs we've had to the rocket boosters that we're using now. And if you catch it on a time when there's a launch, and people don't realize this, we're launching rockets to space almost weekly, sometimes more than one or two a week. So if you can time it perfectly to go to Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex and then catch a launch, it'll blow your mind. It's the coolest thing ever.
I'm assuming you've watched multiple.
I can see them from my backyard. It's common where I'm like, what the hell? Like, is it? And it's like, oh shoot, that was a launch. Like, it's that effect.
Is that something that a buyer asks, like in a home? Like, I want to see a launch happen from my backyard.
You can see from anywhere you live in Brevard County for the most part. I mean, if you've never seen one,
maybe, but
yeah, you P&Ws are just really confined to your own thing. A lot of
most
things
people
going
want
on.
Quiet and peace and quiet when they move to the country.
You don't want to see some things shoot into the space and just see that sonic boom. Oh my God, it's the coolest thing ever.
Well, it's been so fun interviewing you for the 5 minutes I knew you before.
Basically,
now I know you 20 minutes. Yeah, it's going great. Where can people find you and connect with you, or best profile place to connect with you?
I've been fortunate enough to have a very
your YouTube for
name.
$70.
Yeah, I've been very fortunate enough to make a lot of money from YouTube. Shane Bergman. It's like on all my channels.
Perfect.
It's the same. Just Shane Bergman, B-U-R-G-M-A-N. And
perfect.
I'm a hard guy to miss.
Yeah. If you're not watching, he has red hair.
I'm a full-blown ginger everywhere.
Thanks. Thanks for that last comment.
You're welcome. I used to be embarrassed about that, but you get older and you just go with it.
You just go with it. Yeah. Well, thanks for tuning into this week's episode of the Hustle Podcast, and peace out from Space Coast.
Keep hustling.
Keep hustling.